welcome to the 60-whatever episode of Does Your Favorite Movie Suck? Where we revisit great movies from the 80s and 90s that actually might suck. My name, as always, is Kalen Egan.
My name for this episode is Travis Sintel.
But don't stop there!
Listen, guys.
Don't stop there!
We have the specialist of guests.
People are going to fucking pound on the walls.
No, I know. We're in a hotel in Chicago.
Recording this in a hotel room.
So, for this episode, guys, we have one of my dearest friends in the world. This episode, this podcast has been very heavy on Kalen's friends. And I just want to say that my friends haven't only shown up the same way as Kalen's
friends. Because
some
of your friends get banned. No, yeah. No friend of mine has ever been banned from this show.
This guest knows.
You guys are friend of Mike Garner?
Correct.
We don't speak his name.
We'll get to that.
I have some notes from Mike to share.
Yeah, we're going to talk. Oh, my God. So I'm really happy. We're in Chicago. JC, my friend here. JC Avalotis, everybody, lives in Chicago. One of my oldest friends in the world. And we're happy to have him on this podcast. He's very smart. He's very funny. And just as a lead in to introducing JC, I told them both, I feel like you guys are the closest versions of my friends to each other.
Oh, I forgot about this.
So, I expect a little bit of flare-ups and fights here tonight.
Well,
so. Anyway.
Not to stomp all over JC's intro, but what else, I mean, like,
yeah,
that's
what we do.
That's who I am. I've now hung out with him a good 3-4 hours. Mm-hmm. I don't see it. And yeah, Travis said I was going to say that, and he said you would probably say the same thing. Yeah, but you can also be wrong. It could also be true.
Or I could be very right.
Well, we'll find out. You know what? JC, let's put it to the listener.
JC, what's up, man? Tell us what's up with you.
Like biographical details?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Where are you from? What do you do?
So I lived in Chicago about 10 years. I work in nonprofits here. So for my day job, I work as a program officer for a philanthropy in town that makes grants to support all kinds of cool causes that help Chicagoans struggling with poverty. So we support arts education, we support education, housing and economic development, a bunch of really cool stuff.
JC raises money for kids to do art.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
I give it away. I used to raise money for kids to do art.
Oh, you got a new job.
Now I give it away.
Okay, you got promoted. That's good. That's a better... Giving away money is more fun than raising money. Am I right?
It's a little bit easier to do.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
It feels very easy to give away money.
Yeah.
But you haven't surrendered your creative instinct.
No.
I know it's sort of part of what brought you guys together, right?
Yeah. So Travis and I met doing improv and sketch comedy in college and continued to do so for a period after. And I came to Chicago and studied with the Second City and kind of played in the minor leagues there for a little bit and have morphed into a scene that we call in Chicago Live Lit. I don't know if this thing means anything in L.A. Is there a live lit scene?
Cool. There's a huge storytelling community which sort of...
Do they use the phrase Live Lit?
No.
Okay, because storytelling is huge in LA, but that phrase I think is idiosyncratic.
Is that a different thing?
No, same thing. It's slightly different, but we just don't have that phrase.
Yeah.
Well, because in LA at least the story and maybe in Chicago, but the storytelling seems to have at least from what I can tell come out of the stand-up world.
Yeah, totally. So I mean, it's also kind of a it's grown a little bit. So all storytelling is live lit, but not all live lit is storytelling. So like the storytelling world is generally kind of first person autobiographical stories, sort of told with some sort of literary flair or creativity, and that's certainly part of the scene in Chicago. And I've done some of that. But live lit also encompasses like the sort of slam poetry scene, which kind of started in Chicago.
Right.
And then the show that I'm most actively involved in. Is it cool if I plug a
most
little bit?
Most definitely.
Oh, cool.
We have three Chicago listeners. They'll all come.
That's awesome. So there's a really great weekly show called The Paper Machete. It's at the Green Mill, which is kind of an iconic Chicago jazz bar. Al Capone used to own it. A comedian had his throat slashed after a set at the bar once. Like, really
sick,
cool, weird
dude.
Chicago performance history. The Green Mill is also sort of central in like the birth of slam poetry as kind of a movement. But the show that I'm involved in is called The Paper Machete. It is a salon and a saloon. It is a weekly literary magazine. So writers, performers, comedians, journalists sort of do humorous essays on current events, sometimes character pieces or satirical bits. There's also a music act. It's a really great show. We book national acts that are coming through town too, so it's really cool. If you're ever in Chicago, every single Saturday, Green Mill, 3 p.m., always free. We have some content online, so if you want to check out past shows, papermacheteshow.com, check it out.
Oh my God. And I don't mean this as like a funny knock or anything. We've never had a guest as good at self-promotion. We've always offered it.
Well, I want to say this.
Nobody's
sometimes people have a Twitter account, which is cool. I was going to ask Alfred JC at the end of this episode if he had something to plug. Remind me not to do that. You've done it.
Don't do
you
it.
Got your shot.
I'll if do you... it again, man. Like I'll plug. I've only used like the tip of the iceberg of my plug material.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Your self PR.
JC
that
was
awesome.
Also,
that sounds fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's a cool show.
I've actually
it's
seen
it's a legit.
I've
cool
seen
show.
It. It's awesome.
I don't think the LA scene has evolved that far.
It's different, man. And I've been to a bunch of storytelling events in Los Angeles. This is not interesting to podcast listeners, but I've been to a bunch in LA. It's a different scene. It's a totally different scene. It's streamlined. Some of their stories that they do are scored with music and stuff.
Right, right,
like they
right.
They rehearsed
awesome.
With lighting cues and stuff. It's great. So JC was the first person to segue into the episode. JC was the first person.
Yeah,
I
we're
met.
Cutting all that.
Yeah,
let's
yeah.
Get
that was
real.
Just for you to feel like you're
awesome.
In the
that sounds
the
great.
Yeah.
Who cares?
JC was the first person I met in
live lit
in
boring.
College.
Let's talk about 80s movies.
And he had just come off of meeting Mike Garner. He met prior to coming to Emory University.
I
almost
just
met.
Spat out my beer. Inappropriate.
So before I tell you that, so JC also does not know what movie we're watching today, as has become a little bit of a tradition
it's
here.
It's a fun guest tradition. That
does
I
your
would
favorite
like to
movie
on.
Suck? I like it. I have avoided telling JC what the film is.
Rather annoyingly.
Yeah, I know. He's been asking, and I've said no.
I haven't been asking all that much, but you've been acting like I want to know.
Well, you...
That's totally
That's
right.
That's good. That sounds right, actually.
It's another good part of the tradition.
Yeah. JC's asked one question about the film, and it's not repeatable on public broadcast. Do you want to talk about Mike Garner before we go forward?
What?
Why do we need to talk about Mike Garner?
Well, there's been beef
My
here.
My point exactly.
To
We're no, more similar wait, whoa, whoa, whoa. Than I thought. Yeah. Why do we need to talk about
That's
him?
That's a win-win for me, because either you agree with me or you agree with me. Do you want to just defend
If
Mike
it comes
Garner,
out against please? Mike Garner, then I'm on the other
no,
side.
No, so Mike Garner's an amazing, important guy in
oh,
Travis's in my life.
Interesting, good.
The company that we first met sort of doing comedy
well, every
and
life
sketch.
Needs a villain. Every life needs someone to show them how not to live.
The idea
Mike
that
Garner
Mike Garner would be a
that.
Villain is awesome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, so Mike Garner graduated Emory a little before we did, and... performed in and helped lead the company that Travis and I led together, and is a really gifted improviser and physical comedian and clown and juggler, and like he's got phenomenal taste in art.
The movie
really
is
great
Stand by
theories
me,
about
the movie is Stand by Me.
I know that is bullshit.
Oh, wait, I mean,
because I've
not.
Listened to
it's
Stand by Me
Stand
before.
By me.
It is fake,
yeah,
Stand,
it's
by
fake
me.
Stand by Me. That's the clue.
Yeah, it's sports Stand by Me.
Yeah.
Oh shit.
Anyway, Mike Garner is great, is all I want to say.
Yeah.
So, JC, you're out. Oh, Jesus Christ. Kaylin, you're outnumbered here. JC and I agree. The movie, do you want to guess now? Sports Stand By
fake
Me.
Fake Stand By Me.
What not fake Sports Stand By
fake
Me.
Fake Stand By
Come
Me.
Come on, man. That's not nice to the
well,
movie.
This is why. That's my
well,
that's
I
my
get,
pitch for an intro, because that's how I think
no,
fake
I
Stand
know
By
you
Me.
Do.
It's not the Sandlot, is it?
It is the Sandlot.
Boom.
You got it, buddy.
It's Fake Stand By Me.
That's...
Yeah.
I'm so excited about this. I'm
okay,
so fucking excited about this.
Okay, here's a quick lead-in before you geek out, which I want you to do. I told Kaylin, I think this is actually a really, really, really good pool for two things. One, the podcast, which is about nostalgia, which, you know, Sports Stand By Me.
The
has.
Movie is totally about
That's
nostalgia.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Also, I think that JC probably has a lot of nostalgia for the film. JC is one of the biggest sports/baseball fans I know.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Which, Kaylin, you've now learned, because Kaylin and I went to a baseball game and knew nothing about it. And JC was like, let me give you all the stats of all the players
right,
before
right,
you
right,
go.
Right, right, right.
And just rattled them off like a Rain Man baseball fan.
Is it cool if I drop names here? Because like part Whatever of what's outrageous do. Is that you guys also like Theo Epstein, the president of baseball operations, the man who brought World Series titles
Snore.
To Boston and Snore. To the Cubs after 100-year droughts.
Boring.
Got them tickets, and Travis and Kaylin had the opportunity
Ooh.
To go up to Theo Epstein's box and meet him during the game.
We sort of blew
and
it.
Somehow managed to blow them.
I was
kind of
so it's
up.
Not I mean it's not like
Boo.
I think even casual baseball fans, even non-baseball fans, like have some sense for who Theo Epstein is. Anyway,
yeah, yeah.
This is a super
I had
cool
never heard of the name. Before.
Never heard it.
Isn't that
I,
crazy?
I didn't want to walk upstairs.
We'll get into that some other time.
All right.
So anyway, so I do think, and I said this phrase to Kaylin.
It
I'll let you
funny
run.
Though, a baseball movie. I didn't
yeah.
even connect that. We've had
that
a baseball
together?
Experience,
yeah,
and here
great.
We're seeing a baseball.
What's funny is that, like, so I have been excited about, you know, getting the chance to do the podcast, and have listened to several of them before this, but last week listened to a couple to kind of like remind myself what I'm getting into. And I at some point I was running and listening to the Stand By Me episode, and I thought, wouldn't it be funny if it was Sandlot? Like,
did
I,
you really?
I literally thought
I knew
that.
It. I fucking knew
oh
it.
Oh my
because
god!
Because here's the thing: I told Kaylin, I said, I think if I was going to sit down and go through every movie in the bag and actually pick one for JC, this would be at least in the top three of ones I would consider.
But you didn't know that he loved the Sandlot.
Sandlot specifically.
No, we've never talked about The Sandlot,
no,
correct?
We've never.
No, I just know JC. That I just know it's something he would resonate with because he has a really finely tuned sense of nostalgia and a sort of arc. He talks a lot about his past and it's how it relates to his present, but also I know how much he loves baseball.
Right.
So anyway, JC, what do you think about The Sandlot?
Yeah, you kick it off.
Oh, man. So I actually haven't seen it in a while. I think that I'm trying to remember how old I was when I first watched it. I must have been in middle school. I mean, like, I don't mm-hmm. must have come out in the mid-90s, maybe early 90s. I don't remember
feels
for sure.
Right.
Yeah, early 90s. I would bet 92.
Yeah. So I was a big baseball fan as a kid, and it's a movie about some kids sort of playing baseball in a sandlot, and they're like misfit nerdy kids. They're weird. I was a weird misfit nerdy kid. I played baseball in my backyard with the same set of kids every day after school, like from sixth grade all the way until like 10th grade when, you know, I had other things to do. So like I really identified with the kids in this movie. It's got like hints of magical realism. Like it, like there's just a bunch of great stuff about it that I remember. But like I've not watched it recently.
Same framing device as Stand By Me. Obviously.
Is
totally,
it?
Yeah.
Oh,
totally.
There is.
No, for sure.
Is it a? So it is a period.
Well,
this it is a reflection.
Yeah, it is 100%.
And the guy. Well, the movie ends. Spoiler alert, listeners. With the guy who's the narrator, who's now a sportscaster, watching
calling
his friend
a huge decision,
calling a
huge
thing.
Moment in the game. Right.
His friend stealing a third base or whatever.
And there is. Help me remember. Is there voiceover narration from like the it's throughout the film too, right?
Well, sporadically, yes.
That's right. Yeah.
But it's Stand By Me. Yes.
It's similar. That's exactly
it's the
right.
same thing.
Yeah.
So, have you seen it more recently than?
No, but I know it really well. Because,
how do you know it so well?
Well, because it made a big impact on me. I also played baseball with my friends a lot growing up, and it was a movie I saw in the theater. And then this is a dumb reason why it sticks in my brain, but I went to a special screening like. I'm from New Orleans and went to high school in Baton Rouge, so there wasn't a lot of special things that happened in terms
right.
of the film industry there. There was a special screening they did to promote something about The Sandlot that I'd already seen the film, and then we went back to watch it for some promotional thing that happened, and they had a giveaway of like Sandlot paraphernalia. I'd never won anything really in my life, and
wow.
I answered a trivia question about baseball right in the theater and got a...
I'm shocked that is true.
It's true.
Was it really easy?
JC,
stop. Sorry, buddy.
It's really not nice. But I want a keychain. And so I had the Sandlot keychain forever that stayed in my room. And so for whatever reason, that really crystallized the film.
That's great. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
So I'm also really like this is like kind of a perfect draw because I'm actually scared that the movie might suck. Like I haven't seen it in so long. And it's
same,
like a really like it's an important movie in my memory. Like I could see it being awesome or I could see it not holding up at all and like having to like go through that and then talk about it, I guess is kind of exactly what the podcast is
well,
about, which is cool.
My history with the film, which is very, very short, is just that I saw it when I was a kid, when it first came out in the theaters. I remember I went to the theater with Nathan Stoltenberg.
Hi, Nathan.
And we saw it together. And
how old were you? Like middle school?
10?
Yeah.
9 or 10, I think, I guess. And I watched it with vague interest and then came out and felt like, oh, that was a good movie and let's like run. I remember like my main memory of The Sandlot is running from the theater through the parking lot to the car and being like, yeah, this is like I'm sort of supposed to feel like I'm being a kid. I remember that.
Interesting.
And then...
This is Kalen, though. At age 10, he was being a facsimile of a child acting
like
a child.
I felt that
way. I know that I'm supposed to feel like a kid right
now,
so I'm going to act
Kalen.
Like a kid.
Really, that's Kalen right there.
That's fucking
true.
Show.
That's good.
And then... The next thing I knew, I was 12, and I watched Stand By Me, and I was from that point on, I was like, fuck The Sandlot.
Yeah, I get it.
For life.
Yeah.
And so never thought about it then, but hearing you guys talk about it, that's so much more true than I even thought, which is like, I thought like, oh yeah, this movie's about a bunch of kids, that's like Stand By Me, the end. But you're saying that it's also a period piece with a voiceover wraparound.
Yeah,
it also has
device,
a scary dog, which
yep.
is a part of Stand
yep.
By Me.
Yep.
It also has the fat guy, a fat friend, which
mm-hmm.
is the fucking red-haired weirdo
yeah.
who's
who
in all those 90s movies.
Yeah.
And it also has basically Will Wheaton as the lead character, like
mm-hmm.
this goofy sort of skinny kid.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, and it has a vomit scene.
Totally.
Which is they throw up on like a whirly thing or something.
Yep.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
movie's bullshit. That's my
first
theory.
So I totally like hear and acknowledge that, but I think one thing that distinguishes it from Stand By Me.
Baseball.
Is that there's no, yeah, baseball. It's actually about like sort of, it's about summer and the sort of weirdly timeless feeling, but that ends about summer and about baseball.
Okay.
And Stand By Me is like also a journey film. Like there's like something, like there's not really that like forward propulsion right. that you have in Stand By Me of
right,
like a journey.
Right.
Is Wendy Peppercorn from The Sandlot or Stand By Me?
It is totally from Sandlot.
Sandlot. Okay, yeah, and this is the one where that kid gets a fucking make out.
What's his
name? He pretends to drown.
The guy with the glasses. What's his name?
Yeah.
Is that
Smalls?
Smalls. Is that Smalls?
I even know that.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Yeah. I think it might be Smalls.
Ugh, this movie sounds hard yeah. for me.
Here's
to take.
What I worry. No, I worry that this is going to be Schmaltz City. I worry
it is totally Schmaltzy. It is totally Schmaltzy.
So, JC, I'm glad you said that because I had the same concern. I didn't want to acknowledge that to Kaylin prior to recording, but I have a deep fear that this.
Yeah, no, this could be like we also. So it's funny this. This movie, I think just as much as any movie that you guys might pull, like hits the nostalgia button for certain people right. that love it really hard. Well, so we might really piss people off.
But you know what? I'm gonna try not to go into this angry because what actually most blew my mind about this movie in the process of picking it and knowing we were going to do the show is we had Travis's sister on the last episode.
Yeah.
And she pulled it. And she said, "Oh, The Sandlot." She's like, "We watched
Lexi
this."
Brianna.
She Lexi. Was, cool. Lexi. And she was like, "Lexi." She was like, "We watched this movie, and I know this movie, and I could not believe that The Sandlot was still playing to teenage to yeah. kid audiences."
It has lingered.
This That's movie what blows lingered. My mind. So I really want to try. It's not even that I think that means it's good. I kind of don't. But I do want to try to watch it as a kid would watch this movie.
Totally.
Well, who didn't know about Stand By Me, which is rated R, which isn't really, you know, for them necessarily. Who would really just embrace whatever this feeling was of, you know, even if it's a facsimile of running fucking like you're supposed to be a kid when you watch a movie about kids.
Yeah.
I want to try to give it an honest shot.
Well, here's the thing about this podcast that we've learned is that movies that linger aren't necessarily good.
Right.
Right. The lingering quality is not necessarily related to artistic integrity or goodness. It's just a thing that happens.
And this might be the best movie possible to explore this thing that I feel like I've been starting to come around on, which is, you know, we never set out to make a movie title aside, the point was not to tell people that their favorite movie
sucked. Right, right.
That was just a thing. It was just a hook. Which is really
it's really worked out for us.
We have reaped dividends.
Yeah.
But I am fascinated, having watched these movies, that there is something very fundamentally different about a child brain.
Yep.
And an adult brain, which like of course, but as it responds to movies and the things that it responds to and the things that it soaks up and the things that mean things are simply completely different.
Yeah.
And so I'm sort of, it's a weird idea for a podcast because watching it as an adult,
yeah,
those things just don't play the same. They're like different things.
I think that's all. I think that's super smart. Now, I totally also see why you asked about Mike Garner now,
mm-hmm.
because the reason, if I understand, for the Mike Garner beef is how strongly to credit him for this idea of pre-aesthetic, post-aesthetic, mm-hmm. like watching a film before becoming an artist, or so like developing a, you know, more refined aesthetic sense, and like whether it's different now or then. And this film is totally pre-aesthetic for me,
right.
and I feel
right,
like it is
right,
also
right.
like if you had to identify the platonic ideal of film to sort of fetishize in a nostalgic kind of way for a certain generation,
well,
and for, you know,
there.
Maybe young men, like it might be The Sandlot.
Yikes.
So this is like the perfect like Mike Garner argument movie in some ways.
Well,
I
look,
think
all,
so.
All,
thank you
look,
for saying that, JC.
All
Kaylin, apology accepted.
All kidding aside, all kidding aside, you know, we can never mention Mike Garner's name again on the show.
100%. 100%.
Mike, I love you.
This is also like great. Like I've heard you guys on the podcast before. The idea of nostalgia floats throughout as an idea through all this, but this is like such a nostalgic film, and I think it's an opportunity to ask questions about whether nostalgia actually clouds your aesthetic or intellectual judgment
well,
in some way.
To.
Like it's a different like nostalgia hits like emotional receptors in your brain, and like those don't necessarily mean that something is like really good or important or
this
interesting
is
artistically.
This is one of those things that I don't think was a huge box office smash,
but
certain movies stick in the cultural canon for reasons that are just about time and place, it seems to be. So, like, for example, the end of the last podcast, we pulled The Sandlot, and I just made that joke, which was forever. Yeah. Everyone fucking knows that.
Yep.
It's a thing we all know. for a movie that wasn't a massive fucking smash, for everyone our age to know what that means and know what movie it's from, that's interesting to me. Like, there's something there that, that we all had some connection.
Well, that's the thing, that, the and that's, you know, let's wrap it up and let's go watch the movie. But that seems to me to be the thing that's, that sticks out about all the movies we have bashed that have, as adults, or felt do not at, live up to what your childhood memory is. They have, that, that's what has lingered about them, is these moments and signifiers and little, you know, memory badges, you know, that kind of stick with you, that you carry on, and then you look back at them and then it's not the same, but they've already imprinted. I want to know what that is. I really would like to understand what it is in a movie that grafts itself to children.
Same. And those movies, historically on our podcast at least, haven't been good necessarily, but the ones that stick have a thing.
Right.
And I don't know what that thing is, but that doesn't bode well for the viewing of this film in general, because it hasn't stuck around, but parts of it have really stuck around for us. There's scenes we all remember from this film.
Could I hypothesize just a little bit? I mean, like, I wonder, my theory for what it might be about this movie that sticks is baseball. I mean, like, baseball is a deeply nostalgic sport. People that care about it often started to care about it in childhood, and they remember going to the ballpark with their mom or their dad or their aunt or, like, whoever it was. Like, it's a sport, baseball, people that love it, their love for it kind of, you talk about the difference between child brain and adult brain. Your attachment to that sport often starts with child brain.
Sure.
And so I wonder if there's something about, like, that sport and, like, the idea of playing it in your backyard and loving it and, like, you know, fetishizing the people that did it. Like, I want, like, my theory now for why this one might have stuck is at least in part baseball.
Right. I think it's a very good reason. And also, I mean, and listen, Stand By Me has a sense of we're a team because it's us against the world. There's people that want to hurt us. And we're the outcast, and we're de facto, we've become a team. For Outcast to form a sport, whether it's Bad News Bears or whatever, there's a lot of examples of this. But for Outcast to form a team that is an actual legitimate quote-unquote team that they have to then compete against other people, that just crystallizes the metaphor for kids a little bit, and they go, oh, I get it. I get what we're doing here. We're playing a game and we're doing a thing.
Yep.
I think it's going to be kind of a shitty Stand By Me.
Honestly. Let's hope it's interesting to watch on all these other levels, though. I mean, because I agree with you. I have a very hard time imagining that this is a diamond of a classic film.
I
don't think it is.
I'm
either.
Really excited to watch, though, because it's a movie, if I'm being honest, I would never in my life rewatch.
Yeah, right.
Except for on this podcast.
Right,
it's a movie I am excited to revisit.
Totally.
But I wouldn't make time otherwise.
So let's watch it.
All right, here we go. The Sandlot.
Am I good enough to lick the dirt off our cleats?
Watch it, jerk.
Shut up, idiot.
Moron.
Scab eater.
Butt sniffer.
Puss licker.
Fart smeller.
You eat dog crap for breakfast, geek.
You mixed your weeds with your mama's toe jam.
Yeah!
You bob for apples in the toilet, and you like it.
You play ball like a girl.
What did you say?
You heard me.
Tomorrow. Noon. At our field. Get the buffalo butt breath.
Count on it, pea drinking crap face.
Yeah! Yeah!
Let's go!
I'm starting the podcast. We're just gonna get through this.
Are you recording now?
I'm recording.
Is my mic on?
It's on. Let's just
let's
get into this right
now. Here's
how
I want to start.
Yeah.
I challenge you guys to say state a positive.
I got a positive.
Let's hear it.
I think at least two of the performances of the little boys were fine and delighted me.
JC?
Fact.
They won that baseball game against the team of bad kids on their bikes.
That's not a positive. You're being you got to answer the question for real.
I'm struggling to answer it for real.
One thing?
No, I mean,
this is awesome.
Yeah, it's rough. It's rough.
Moving on.
No, I'm gonna say hold your feet to the fire here.
Yeah.
No sarcastic answers. Give us a real thing, because I mean it. Two of those kids. Love them.
Which two did you like?
I don't know.
um,
one thing, huh?
Yeah, just give us any fucking thing that, like, even a shot, you're like, that shot was pretty good.
You named one that you liked, but I do mean it. Yeah. I don't know. I'm having a hard time here.
Just
really
listeners,
am.
Just so you know, while you think, JC, this is the experience of watching the movie.
Yeah.
Just waiting for something to happen.
Yeah.
So here we go. We're going to wait for something to happen.
We just put JC in the biggest pickle of his entire life.
I don't know. I mean, how JC, long are you guys going
to
wait?
No, honestly. Wait, hold on. Okay,
can I
wait.
Just do it?
Yeah.
But don't. He's not off the hook.
No.
Okay. Because I have some filler to talk about, too. Go ahead.
Well, here's my filler. I did think, all in all, it looked kind of nice as a movie. The guy was not an untalented framer.
Cinematographer. Because I don't think the director
it's probably
called
true.
Those shots.
Can I tell you something about this director?
Yeah. Mickey
Whatever.
Evans?
He did this.
Mm.
And then he did something else that was horrible. And then he got hired to do Beethoven 3 and Beethoven 4. Guy likes dogs.
Wheelhouse. Really likes
Guy
Wheelhouse.
Likes yeah, he knows dogs. His thing.
Do you think when he turned this cut into the studio, they said, you got to make it an hour. It's the movie's hour 41, guys. You think when he turned it in, the studio is like, hour 30, we don't release it. And he goes, there's not a frame I can cut. There's not a frame I can cut out of this thing, guys.
No,
it's tight.
I think he
it's running
in,
tight.
Here's what I'm almost being serious.
An hour and 12 minutes, and they were like, we got to have more.
Got to pack.
No, I think he turned in a 3-hour cut.
Right.
And they were
right.
like, what? And he's like, I can't touch it.
Yeah, it's good.
And they were like, give me a break. And he's like, all right. I'll mess with it for 5 years, and I'll get it down
it's
to this
masterpiece.
It's
tight 112 or whatever it is.
JC,
so I think it for a film that is like entirely trying to capture like a nostalgic era, like visually, it kind of captures
great.
Like captures the period pretty well, like particularly like early on, like the establishing shots of the town, like
fucking agree
production design, like it sort of screams early 60s.
Into it,
like,
into it.
It's kind of like all those crisp white shots, like really.
Here's the thing. All right, thank God we got that out of the way.
Yeah, sorry guys, it really took me a while.
It's fair. No. Listen, that was fair.
The Stand By Me is more apt than you can possibly imagine.
100%.
And I also, this movie had the effect. It's hard to talk about the movie because it made me hate other things in the world. It's the kind of movie that just makes you like look around and be like, oh, yeah, I fucking hate that lamp. Yeah. I hate these curtains. I hate everything that I can think of right now. Like, I hate Stephen King for inventing boomer nostalgia in this way. I fucking hate him. I'm so pissed. I thought about all the times Stephen King did something and I'm like, fuck you, man. Like, why'd you have to put this in the world?
Yeah.
I also hate boys. I hate them. I hate boys. More than anything watching this movie, I was like, hate boys.
Here's a question.
And men. I fucking hate. I mean, I'm like, that's what
I get.
The experience watching this movie was like, I fucking hate them.
What about boys to men?
You can't hate that.
Well,
you turn me back around on boys and men.
Do you think there's a space for like a hyper real sort of hyperbolic big fish take on childhood summers?
Not anymore.
Do you think when this movie was made, before it was made, there was a way to do that? To take a Stand By Me.
When they made. Oh, you mean like more hyperbolic? Well,
yeah, I do.
Here's the thing, and I should be open about this.
Because compared to this, Stand By Me is a documentary.
Absolutely.
Right.
I should be open about this. I am on record, and well, I'm about to go on record on this show. I don't think I've said this before. I really don't like A Christmas Story.
Yeah.
I'm like maybe the only person I know who's like, I really don't like watching it. It makes me uncomfortable. And this is like a thousand times worse than A Christmas Story.
It's true.
But it's not a genre I'm down with. Yeah. And it's not really even about the, I guess it's about the nostalgia factor. It creeps me out. It's that, because all I think of when I watch this movie and A Christmas Story and not Stand By Me, oddly, is like, a gross man like telling me something.
Well, it sucks that Stand By Me falls in this category because it's, I would say, Christmas Story and Sandlot are much closer in my mind than either of those two to Stand By Me, even though this is Stand By Me.
It just rips the shit out of Stand By Me.
Because I was watching this movie sort of stunned by it because in my head, if you would have asked me you know, not remembering The Sandlot that well, it turns out. If you'd have asked me, oh, you know what? It'd be cool if you had a summer movie of, like, kids with this endless summer that went forever, and it was hyperbolic, and all the dogs were monsters, and all the kids were, you know, fucking assholes, and the boys conquered the girls, and I'd be like, yeah, there's something there. You could probably do something with that. Now, and watch this movie, I thought, oh, you can't do something with that.
Yeah, right.
That's impossible to make that film. No, because
I think you could do something with it if you cared about anything in the story. Like, because I think, like, there is something, like, I think interesting and important about the idea of, like, summers that last forever. But, like, this movie, like, it's, like, one of the most cynical things.
I bet you that director cared so fucking hard. I bet you. I bet you he's like, I'm going to do a story about my childhood.
Dude wrote it, too.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I bet you he cared, man, which is crazy. Like, I really think he cared.
So, I mean, I kind of see that, but, like, what in the film makes you think that? I'm curious about that. Because, like, I mean, it's, like, it's super schmaltzy, like, the tone is, like, very, like, it's clear that it's, like, earnest and trying to do something, but, like, the gags are, like, gross and on the surface, like there's no real relationships, the dialogue is really awful, like,
oh, no,
what in the movie makes you think is, like,
I bet you, so, just quickly, and JC will do the plot, because he's our guest, but I'll give you a hint, it's a bunch of, like, basically skits, interstitials, that kind of culminates in some sort of plot, and the movie's ostensibly about these kids who bond over baseball. And then, you know, nothing was, like, that good again because they were childhood friends and that was it. So you'll do the plot in a second. But that's kind of my answer to this is I bet you this guy set out to write, like, his definitive fun childhood nostalgia movie. This is what it feels like to me. The whole movie reeks of that. And you're right. It's not funny. It's not talented. It's not well constructed. The bits go on forever and they don't necessarily connect or relate to each other. It's just childhood adventures and shenanigans, which other movies do somewhat successfully, I would argue. This one just fails to do it. And I just think it's a lack of talent, not a lack of passion in a lot of ways. It's my guess.
I say something that I'm afraid I'll forget if I don't say it now?
Mm-hmm.
To go back to this idea of feeling like I'm watching a man tell me something. This...
But
I think when I watch this movie, all I think about is, like, middle-aged divorce.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't know why, but this guy seems unhappy to me. He seems unpleasant to be around, and he seems to have shined on a fantasy version of his past as a way to deal with middle-aged, like, unpleasantness and nastiness. And I don't know what it is about this movie that makes me feel that way, but I just fucking looked at this guy's picture, like his IMDb shot, and I'm like, yep.
Yeah.
This guy's been divorced one to three times.
Well, and you mean the author? I thought you meant the character. Well, it
no,
is him.
No, but the guy who made the movie.
Yeah, I get it. But also
that's the story I'm telling myself, I can't be around this anymore. No, I can't be around this guy.
I get you. I also think it's the character that is him, I guess, which is the framing device character, because that guy is sad as fuck. And like Richard Dreyfuss in Stand By Me, it's a healthy nostalgia. It's a healthy sadness. It's the one I can get behind. This is like a deeply sick sadness.
I don't know. Like, I mean, it's maybe it's too trite or easy to say, but I feel like I totally see structurally the comparison to Stand By Me, but it feels like comparing one thing that is not worthy of the other half of the comparison, because like in Stand By Me,
I was hoping you'd land the actual example.
I know, sorry. I wanted to see what I was struggling for it. I'll come back to it if I get
it's
something
like
better.
It's like comparing an orange to a plastic orange and a
right. For some reason, I kept thinking of really like bad things, like metaphors that wouldn't be good.
Oranges to a shit pile.
But I mean, Stand By Me starts with like a death, and there's a reflection on mortality.
Yes.
Also, like, they have something to do that's a through line through the film.
Yeah, and like there's a journey that's meaningful. You buy the relationships, like you get that, like they're working something out. Like this movie has none of that.
We're gonna make ourselves sad if we talk about Stand
By Me. One more thing on this guy, and then I want to move on to our experience.
Well, verbalized as you? Yeah.
Do that, and then we'll do.
I got a real problem with this. What I just looked up.
Oh man!
If you had to guess,
I'm so tired.
I know. I'm just tired. Well, there's a reason. We'll get to that. We should cover why we're tired. But, here's the problem with this movie.
It's because a dog chases around Chicago.
Here's the problem. Here is the problem with this movie. And this says so much, and we could take the entire episode to unpack it. What year do you think this guy was born?
Oh, interesting.
Okay. And this movie's made in 93?
Sure.
I bet you he was 45. I'm going to say 1951.
I bet you he's younger than we think. So like I'm going to bet like
1962.
Pretty solid, JC. Well done, JC.
No, he's like, so he's like, it's kind of even worse because he's like manufacturing this nostalgia.
Way worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
Way worse.
It's gross.
Yeah.
I really am uncomfortable with that.
Yeah, I get it. It's gross.
Well, JC, you were the one who was excited to watch this movie. And I'm not, that's not like I'm being a dick about it, but
I
kind
of was too. I kind of was too.
Well, okay. So what was your experience watching it now?
Yeah.
Did you remember it well? Like,
no, I didn't remember it well at all. And my experience watching it now made me feel like, God, I was like stupid as a kid when I watched this and loved. I it's one of those like experiences that I felt like really bad for loving it earlier.
I get it. We're going to get into this because I think...
Well, this is what we said at the beginning of the intro. What I was fascinated by and what I really tried to hang on to, you guys, was what is in this movie that does...
Kid brain.
I did an okay job of that, I think.
Okay, great.
I won't forget this. So, JC, give us the plot.
Sure.
So our listeners don't harangue us on Twitter.
Yeah. So...
Good luck with this.
That's pretty simple.
Yeah,
straightforward.
You can Cliff Notes this.
I'm going to do my best. Kid named Scott Smalls, call him 11, moves to a new town after his real dad dies. His construction really, like, that was when I knew we were in for trouble. That little writing moment.
Totally.
But Scott Smalls moves to a new town.
You knew we were in trouble.
That's
in the first
narration.
Line
has
the adult version of him says,
yeah, my real
dad had died.
Yeah. But after couple years after real dad dies, mom marries Bill, played by
Dennis
and
Leary.
Over it Dennis Leary. excuse me. Moves to a new town. A couple weeks before school ends, has zip time to make new friends. He's bummed about making new friends. Stumbles on to this sandlot baseball game with this group of really enthusiastic kids.
Two of whom are good actors.
I'm gonna say they're all pretty good.
Yeah,
they were fine. I
enjoyed a lot of
Smalls.
As much as I hate boys, they were fine.
Smalls begs stepdad Bill, whom alternates in the film between dad and Bill in every sentence, like dad. Will you
they
teach
really,
me to, Bill,
they
will you
really
teach me to
draw
play catch?
A target around that.
Yeah, that's important.
But it's true. It goes both ways.
Yeah.
How come he sometimes says, hey, dad, I mean Bill.
Because he doesn't know what to call him.
And then sometimes he goes, hey, Bill, I mean dad.
Yeah,
I'm doing a terrible job of this plot synopsis.
No,
this
right.
is
we're,
what
we're,
I,
we're
I fucking
out.
Knew this would happen.
Yeah, no, it is like... It's
impossible.
It doesn't hang together.
You can't tell a non-story.
It doesn't hang together.
Nobody can summarize a non-story.
No, that's right.
It's impossible.
Let's tell a couple of the interstitial sketches.
Yeah, so ostensibly it's about this kid learning to play baseball with these kids. And they get into a bunch of kid-like adventures. Like on one day, it's too hot to play baseball, so they go to a pool where they sexually harass one of the sexy lifeguards. And then, kind of out of nowhere, a group of bad kids on nice bikes in full baseball uniforms ride up to the sandlot and challenge them to a baseball game. That they of course lose, and then
the rich
rich nice kids on bikes lose, and then to celebrate they go to a carnival.
So wait, I just want to interject here for a moment that every time there's a confusion about what do we do now, all the kids answer in unison every time.
Yeah.
And that little thing drove me really crazy, like more than it should have. It was like, what do we do now? Silence, and then I'll go pool.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Anyway, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's...
All through this, everything JC is describing takes a million years to happen.
That's right.
And they're constantly teasing you that eventually...
Something is going to happen.
These characters are going to find themselves in
the worst
pickle they've ever been in. Then, I mean, I say that because they say it over and over again.
You wouldn't believe, listeners, how many... It's three is the answer, but they
well, it's kind of four,
yeah.
but it's...
Yeah.
But they... It's literally the author of the screenplay going, please stick with me.
Yeah.
Right.
There's something coming, I swear.
Yeah.
Right.
And that doesn't come until nearly an hour into the film.
Yes.
Sorry.
No, not nearly, like 54 minutes in.
That's when it starts, but then it takes longer to get going.
And then the way they get there, like they lose like 3 to 5 baseballs before they lose the baseball that really matters. Mm-hmm. But then they hit a baseball over a fence. into a yard inhabited by a dog known as the Beast, who has eaten 173 men and one child who hopped over the fence, according to the legend. And the dog swipes all the baseballs that go over the fence. And Scott Smalls, the new kid who's just recently won his way into the baseball team, somehow doesn't know who Babe Ruth is still over the course of the film.
I know.
And
don't
steals Bill / Dad the from his trophy room, steals a Babe Ruth autographed baseball.
He doesn't, let me just clarify this. He doesn't know who Babe Ruth is for an entire summer with a team of boys who worship Babe Ruth. He never figures it out, never asks anybody.
After having
else.
Written down on his notebook baseball things to remember Babe Ruth.
Yeah. Yeah,
guys, but listen, the internet
and
wasn't
then,
invented yet. It's impossible
and
for
then
him to find
in
out.
The midst of a chase across town, he somehow figures out that
George
Babe
Ruth
is George Herman Ruth.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Right.
This movie.
It's strange. So he steals the baseball and then hits it into the yard with the Beast. And then for like a year and a half, they try various ways to get the ball out of the backyard, and the Beast stifles them every time.
I said this in the screening, but I just want to put a flag here that this is a segment that should be fun. It's kids inventing machinery to get a thing out, but it's the most soul-suckingly joyless creativity you've ever seen in a movie. Like, it's like, it's methodical, and it's just like, okay, I gotta build a new fucking stupid thing now, and then let's try that, and that's gonna fail too. It's supposed to be, it's we'll talk about the score later, because it drove me insane.
I got every erector piece I could find, and I built a catapult,
and it became
and
machine versus nature.
Ugh.
But it's so joyless. It's
it is.
So fucking devoid of any excitement or interest or creativity.
Part of the reason it's joyless is that they tried the same thing like five times in a row, just with different configurations of tools and kids in different places.
And
like
every time the dog bites the thing, chews it up, and spits it over the fence, and it's just like you just watch the same thing. It's almost like an Andy Warhol project or something. It's like, you know, the same thing's going to happen again.
It's Groundhog
Day for
shitty
people.
And
it weirdly drags out each one of them.
Yeah.
And so you watch the same, you literally watch the same scene about four times.
Imagine if you had to watch a kid run a 100-yard dash 1,000 times. And you're like, you just start here and then here. You see the finish line. You see when he starts. And you just have to watch his fucking dumbass run.
Yeah, this is
run.
Like, better than Andy Warhol. This is like the Brown Bunny. This is like watching Vincent Gallo drive his motorcycle across the desert. And then turn around and drive the motorcycle back.
You're like, okay, good. Yep. All right, so go on, JC.
And I like
I like
the Brown Bunny.
Well, I don't like watching kids run 100-yard dashes.
No.
No. They fail to get the ball back. And then the leader of this ragtag Sandlot baseball team is visited in a dream by the ghost of Babe Ruth,
God.
Who tells him just hop over the fence and steal the ball.
Now, is this the narrator's dream or a dream he heard about?
This is a dream that he heard about.
Just to be clear.
From Benjamin Franklin Rodriguez, who's like the best baseball player.
Sure.
Yeah, I know. There's totally some problems with like perspective and like.
Yeah, did anybody bump anybody else?
Yeah, no, it was strange. It was strange.
Wait a minute. Uh-huh. He describes his dream.
Yeah.
He had a dream.
Uh-huh.
He just decides that dream isn't really interesting enough to visually depict in this essay he's writing for nobody.
Right.
And then, you see his friend's dream, which is
far
I'm
more
gonna
vivid.
Argue. Way more boring than his dream.
It's very boring.
Way more boring.
Yeah. So I want to get through the plot thing because I actually kind of
why
I'm kind of digging this
who
more than the movie
cares?
Honestly.
Yeah. No. But like so. So then there's. I do want to like come back to the point about like if there is a good movie in here, like what would have to change?
Because
I'm kind of like interested in that as an exercise. So the leader of the ragtag Sandlot baseball team has a dream in which Babe Ruth tells him to hop the fence and get the ball. So he hops the fence and gets the ball, heroically runs out and jumps the fence, and then the dog gets loose and jumps the fence. And then there's an interminable chase scene throughout the town.
Are there hijinks, though?
With
are there wacky
with
hijinks?
The dog. There are hijinks that are supposed to be wacky, but I think the phrase joyless creativity captures it really well. There's also, like, the movie spends all of its time setting up gags that don't need any setup, and then like not setting up plot points that actually like need setups. Like the there's like a really horribly long set piece with a cake. Like the chase scene runs through a Founders Day parade that just sort of like popped up in the middle of nowhere. And they're moving a really tall, multi-layer wedding cake.
Well, that sounds kind of funny. Thing. Is the cake fall or something?
That's well, awesome. No, we don't know.
Hold
I mean, it
on,
takes like
man. Yeah, just, you got to so let it. You got to let it build.
I just
yeah.
feel like if there's a big, cake...
they've only just introduced the cake. I mean, they got to teeter that cake a little bit
for about 8 minutes.
Some people have to think that cake's definitely not.
That
gonna
cake's
going to
be fine.
Because when they I gotta put the first cake see the down. Cake, I think, wow. That
no,
cake...
just but just
oh, sorry.
Just fucking enjoy it, dude. Just enjoy the feeling. This cake, you know,
just seems like my fault.
You're pretty sure. Something's gonna happen
I mean,
with that
it's
cake.
It's unnaturally large.
But like
cake.
Hitchcock tells us, the longer you stay without executing the cake disaster,
yeah.
like that's what an
the
audience
more the
really
tension
wants.
Builds. Yeah, I also feel like this writer was really invested in the rule of threes, but sometimes thought like,
if three's good,
like nine must be great. Like multiples of threes were also okay, because some things like had 6 or 9 or 12 times before.
It's called exponential
before
comedy,
they paid off.
Jason.
No, that's
it's
right.
Very progressive.
That's right. So yeah, there was like an interminable chase scene, and then they end up back in the sandlot.
What? Why?
Because they try to get the dog back into the backyard, and then the fence falls on the dog somehow.
I was looking at something else when that happened. Was anybody watching to see how the fence fell on the dog?
Yeah,
the dog ran through the fence, and then the fence fell on the dog.
The dog knocked, instead of jumping over the fence, which the movie has established it can do, because it has done it, he runs through a board, and turns out when you dislodge a board from a fence, the whole fence falls over. But also the dog stopped running in time for the fins to fall in.
Yep, it weird. Just stood there for a second.
So it makes total sense.
Right. And then Smalls felt really sad because the dog was whimpering, and then asked his friend to help lift the thing off, and then it turns out the dog wasn't so bad. The dog licks his face, it's fine.
Dog was fine.
And then they take the hurt dog into the owner's house, and it's James Earl Jones.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, who was...
Just when you thought this wasn't really a movie, here comes James Earl Jones to be like, sorry, it's a movie.
Gravitas.
And James Earl Jones, so this isn't really established. He was a baseball player contemporary of Babe Ruth's.
This is gonna blow you guys' mind, but this is the part I have a problem with.
Oh, my God.
What's your problem with it?
So the plot point is, so these guys need to get their baseball back. And what the movie wants to do is be like, well, they'll get a baseball from this guy. That's the idea. And they go, well, why would this guy who's blind... And lives by himself and is a weirdo and sort of a murderer, according to the local children, a la mini movies. Why would he have this baseball? Well, let's make him a baseball player. And so they make James Earl Jones. They have a picture of him playing baseball with Babe Ruth, and he keeps calling him George to indicate that he's on the
He knows him.
Basis.
I know him. George
know him.
Signed this?
And,
yeah, but here's what this character. Let me just paint a picture real fast.
Yeah, I'm done. That just it's the craziest, dumbest idea.
I just want to paint a picture of what this character is. He's a man who legend has sprung up around his dog that it was owned by some psychopaths who fed it racks of ribs, and it grew to be a monstrous size. So wherever this legend came from, don't know. It just lives in his backyard. He's blind. He lives in a shack. And he has a trophy room full of
priceless
baseball
memorabilia. Yeah.
And he was a once famous baseball player. So nothing about this, and he's black. So nothing about this character adds up, makes sense. No piece fits with any other. He has no story. He's a complete fantasy figment, bizarro magic guy who is just there to show up. He doesn't even play the Boo Radley thing. He's just suddenly there. To finish the movie, to be like, well, here's an ending. You get this ball,
right?
I hated it.
Deus ex James Earl Jones.
Yeah. So this plot thing is as interminable as the movie. I want to ask this question again. So, the feeling of watching it, knowing that you loved it,
yeah,
you were uncomfortable with. What else? Like, what did it? Did it? Did you get? Was there scene recall or not even that?
There was some scene recall, like mainly it was, I felt really disoriented at how much I had built up the baseball in the movie, because for a movie that's ostensibly about baseball, there's zero baseball in the movie, and the baseball in the movie sucks. Yeah. I kind of remember this as a sports movie, and it's not a sports movie.
Right.
Like, none of the sports movie stuff is real. The the baseball in the movie, like apart from the fact that I remember kind of playing baseball as a kid and playing baseball in backyards with misfit friends, like that's about all that lines up with this movie. Like I remember thinking, like, yeah, it's cool. Like the baseball is inspiring. Like a kid that is bad at baseball gets good at baseball. But in the movie, the scene where that happens is literally like 45 seconds long, and a kid closes his eyes and puts out a glove and catches a ball that he's not been able to catch before, and then all of a sudden he's perfectly fine at baseball.
Yeah.
And like, so it's like maybe he's expecting too much for this to be a great sports movie, but I remembered it as a sports movie, and it's not a sports movie
I can
at all.
Tell you what I liked
so that
about
was
it.
Weird.
Yeah.
So I remembered less than I thought and more than I thought, weirdly. The plot, obviously. It turns out, listen, kids don't remember plot in these movies because there's no plot. That's the answer to that big question.
Right.
But
we found that many times.
Yeah, it happens over and over again in our podcast. Like if we remember like Short Circuit, for example, you go, oh yeah, Short Circuit. Do you know the plot of Short Circuit? No, of course you don't, because no one does, because there's not one. That's the Sandlot. There's no plot. It's just some comedy sketches. But I think my kid brain, you know, really was interested in the idea of having friends that did stuff together. And just went on adventures. And it's just a very aspirational kids film. And a lot of those things I really remembered. And I thought, well, man, if I had friends like that, it'd be so fun. It'd be so fun to have those friends to go around and do stuff with and run around. And I had a couple friends in my neighborhood, and we'd go, like, you know, in the swamps and just find ropes to climb and stuff. But they had a field to play on, and they did stuff. Like, there was a fair, and they messed up, and they threw up on people. And then that guy kissed the lifeguard. Like, oh, fun adventures. So I think for a kid, you just have this vaguely good feeling about it.
So I agree. Now, I said in the intro that I, even as a kid, something told me that this was not right. But I was, like, willing to take that ride and just sort of, you know, play along. And I remember that feeling. And watching it now, and it was interesting because, a lot of people who were our age watched it and did not have that sense of it. They just bought it whole cloth. And I don't think I'm any better than those people or above them at all. But
you were watching X-rated films with your dad.
I was almost that at that point, yeah. But I guess my question, and this is something that we maybe won't be able to answer, but it's like I was watching this movie thinking like, well, I hate this. I would rather be doing anything else. I mean, I like this show, but I would rather be doing anything but watching this movie. But it obviously isn't for me. And this very off, I can see a cynical man that a child could not see in terms of someone who made this movie. So my question is, if it's a kid's movie, is there any more value in terms of the feeling that you had as a kid? I'm directing it at you, Travis. Mm-hmm. If you watched a great movie or a really good movie that you would enjoy now, is that better in a kid's mind? Do they get a better experience out of that then than they do out of a piece of cynical garbage like this that still triggers those feelings of wanting to have a good time, wanting to have friends, whatever else? Like, is this just a totally different form of art, you know, that you...
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily... I mean, if you never see the good films, then no. But if you eventually will see the good films anyway, I think that there's a place for this in a way. And I going back to the sort of full circle on this, I do think there's a place for a highly metaphorical, hyperbolic, you know, never-ending summer film there. I think that because the emotions are true and because, you know, kids want that, kids want friends and they want to have adventures and they want to do stuff, we'll get to Goonies eventually.
I'm dreading it.
I know. Well, I am more dreading Goonies after watching this film than I ever have been.
Right.
Because the aspirational thing is real for kids. It's a thing that we like and we want. And so I think that there's something to speak to that is not necessarily damaging or too fucked up or exploitive of that emotion.
Well, yeah, but what is the I guess what I mean is, what is the value of a better movie to a kid? Like, I'm starting to wonder, what is it? Do you get, as a child, do you get more out of a great film? Like, let's call E.T. a great film.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch E.T. and you watch The Sandlot, is there a difference? I mean, like, I guess, I'm trying to understand what good means when you take out any ability to assess those things.
JC, what do you think?
Yeah.
This is cutting the heart of the podcast here.
Yeah, I think sadly there's no difference. I mean, I think kids, I don't know. one of the things that's interesting and kind of scary about film in some ways is that it's really easy to sort of figure out what emotional receptors you're trying to hit and hit them. And so this film kind of does that. And it's also, I mean, it's emotionally satisfying. I mean, like, there's some cheap gags, there's some music and some visuals and, you know, and maybe some aspirational stuff. And like, I don't think, I'm trying to remember, because I watched some great films as a kid and I watched some shitty films as a kid, and I love them both almost equally. And I'm trying to remember like whether like I could actually tell the difference, and I don't think you can. And I don't think this is harmful. Like I don't think it's actively bad, but I don't think like if your question is like, is a good film better for a kid than this?
That is.
Here's the answer for me.
Like, I don't think you know.
I don't think kids have the intellectual or emotional capacity to understand what makes a good film good.
Right.
And so the things that the richness of experience, the sort of tapestry, the storytelling, the metaphor, the resonances that occur, those things that sort of make any story, whether it's written or visual, transcend, kids don't know that. And they may on a gut level respond to the emotional arc of things when they're done well and they're big and they sort of work.
Well, I get, you know, and can I, the reason I'm getting at this, and I wasn't actually going to talk about this, but maybe this helps explain what I'm trying to get at, is like, I have a 1.5-year-old, you have a kid, mm-hmm. and we put on Teletubbies or whatever. And we found this weird YouTube video, which is all point of view of a child playing with toys. It's like shot from the eyeballs of a child playing with toys. It's so fucking weird. It's like watching something in another language. Teletubbies literally, basically, is just a foreign baby language. And the children are fascinated by it. And Dallas loves it. He loves watching that stuff. And he got super mesmerized by this weird point of view playing with toys video. And I'm suddenly like thinking, like, this movie doesn't, it doesn't matter who created it in this case. I mean, those things were obviously done with a certain kind of intent. I don't believe this guy thought he was only making a movie for 9-year-olds or whatever.
No.
But the fact that it exists as a product and an experience that speaks loudly to 9-year-olds and I think perhaps harmfully shapes them in certain ways, but for the audience is just fucking right. I watch it now and I'm like, I can't watch this. I can't decode this. I hate it. I see a different thing in it than I think, you know, somebody who watched it at that age can see. And that suddenly feels the same to me, where I'm like, what business have I to watch this movie that an 8-year-old likes, you know, and then to say like, this is a fucking sucks, you know, like, just don't ever watch this. We should never be watching this movie. Like, no. Someone needs to be out there just saying, no, never watch this.
Yeah.
Never watch it.
That's a lot of the films here. And it's, we're getting better at predicting which ones will fall into this, right. But we still make some mistakes sometimes. I also want to point out that when we're in Chicago, which we'll get into again in a second, but I looked up on iTunes to rent the Sandlot, and you type in Sandlot, and the movie comes up, and 12 80s movie podcasts come up about the Sandlot.
Yeah.
This thing is in there. So this hit a chord, and I would contend it's not because it's great. It's because it was the only thing doing that at this time for guys like us who, like, oh, dude, it'd be so good to have a gang to have adventures with.
Right.
I really think that's it. And the reason we all know it is because it spoke to us at that time about something that we wanted. And is it cheap and schmaltzy? For sure. But it's there and we saw it because it's something we
total,
wanted.
Is it a total pile of garbage? Of course.
Yeah.
But you're right. It just somehow it fit that need. It also, I don't think it was even a hit. It was just the thing that lingered because you needed a thing like that.
It was the thing that did that thing. Yeah. And it was, I looked it up, it was 58% on Rotten Tomatoes, which seems extraordinarily high.
Way too high. Appallingly high.
Yeah, weird. I was very surprised. I mean, The Mummy's only pulling at 27% on Rotten Tomatoes. Anyway, so yeah, it's really bad. It's a really bad film.
I say this with every fiber of my being. Don't watch it.
Yeah. But, you know, the emotion that you have about it is a true emotion. And just hold on to that, because you definitely remember, like, the way the Sandlot probably made you feel.
Right.
And that feeling is true, but the movie's fake.
Yeah, and the movie's fake, and it's also, it will be unpleasant to re-experience.
Fucking way unpleasant, you guys. It's way unpleasant.
Yeah.
It's
and we didn't even, I mean, we started to talk about it. It's got super fucked up women issues, which is also the things that I apply to this weirdo of a director. I'm just like, I don't want to know anything about you. It's got a little bit of
Revenge of the Nerds problem.
It does. And it celebrates guys in this way that is so exclusionary that I just found really, like, sinister and gross.
Yeah.
Which is like, if woe unto any young girl who accidentally stumbles her way into this movie, because she is essentially going to be told, that you do not belong in the fun world. And I mean, you know, they've tried to make movies like this for girls, and maybe we'll watch now and then. I think it's in the bag, but like, this movie in particular is just like, it's just not for you. Anybody who could possibly be listening to this, it's not for you.
One of the things that's like interesting to me about this is that I had romanticized this in my head, because I remembered not just sort of liking it and feeling like, yeah, it'd be cool to have a gang of friends. That wasn't what stuck with me about it. What stuck with me about it was being kind of like a misfit kid, being bad at something that you wanted to be good at, and like working hard and getting good at it. And then also like I remembered the framing. I remembered the kid who kind of felt like he was an outsider, sort of like standing in the back of the field watching, and then he becomes a baseball commentator, which is interesting. Like, he could become baseball,
right?
He loves baseball, like, right, to become somebody who like always watches it but never gets to do the thing. I kind of remembered those pieces of it, and I've talked about this movie a lot, and like, those are the details, like these like kind of weirdly poetic or poignant details,
right?
Yeah.
But I'm giving the movie a lot more credit than it actually deserves. Yeah. There,
totally.
And it's weird because like that's the stuff that, you know, I think it's like I sort of remembered that stuff back on to the movie starting, right, much later,
right,
but like, it's just not there at all. But no, like, it's interesting that those are like the details that I remembered.
Sure.
And I wove together this other different movie.
Well, not just that you remembered, but which you carried into your adulthood and sort of recalibrated in order to make.
Because in some ways, those are the values that I try to live now. Or, but it's interesting because like I made it a different movie in my head that I was watching.
It's
kind of
what I've learned about this, and I totally think this is true, that whatever thing you think and find pleasure about from this film, that's a real thing, and hold on to that. But if you watch this movie again, you're going to burn that to the fucking ground.
Totally, yeah, exactly. That's the point. Your Sandlot is way better than the Sandlot.
If it's cool, maybe we can hit this now. Because I also, like, what I want is for somebody to be listening to this, and like, maybe you're hurt that we're saying the Sandlot is bad, and so like, you might need to watch it and realize how bad it is. But then like, make the version that you remember, because like, idea of a kid that is sort of eternally on the edges. Like, I do have a kid now. My kid is 3.5, and so like, he's starting to get into more complex story, and like, really great child story that is like actually good is one of the best things in the world.
Right.
And this film doesn't get there, but it's got the ingredients of some stuff that's really interesting. The idea of like being a kid that is eternally on the margins and watching, like, interesting stuff here.
I agree. I would just put it slightly differently. I would still say do not watch this movie, but just know we're not talking about your movie.
Yeah, you know, we're talking about
the movie we watched tonight,
yeah.
which is called The Sandlot. You know, and your version of that. I really mean this. I'm not just trying to be like, you know, falsely generous or something. Your movie's probably great. The movie that you remember is probably pretty awesome, and that can still be a movie. We're not talking about that. So just like, yeah.
If you have to watch something, sit down, think about what you think The Sandlot is, go watch Stand By Me, come back and reminisce totally. About
and it. And remember like, a bunch of baseball.
While holding a baseball.
Yeah, I wish there was a slightly kiddier version of this that was more fun, and I'll just think about what that movie was when I was 10.
Yeah, or and almost all the good things we've picked out are also in Stand By Me.
It, totally. But, I mean, Stand By Me was rated R, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, it's interesting because I listened to that one. I listened to Stand By Me, the Stand By Me podcast that you guys did last week, sort of preparing for you guys to come.
Oh, how funny.
And you said something, Kaylin, that, like, was cool and smart and I think made sense. But, like, you said it's cool for kids. There's something in here that's kind of challenging and edgy for kids. Stand By Me, not Sandlot.
Yes.
But, I mean, like, I think it matters, like, Stand By Me comes from a Stephen King story. It is a rated R movie. Like, Stand By Me's audience, like, if it is a kid audience, it's mid to late adolescence. Like,
well,
like, this is like clearly like, it's unapologetically a kid's movie. Like, this is
okay. But let me ask you this: if that's true, and I think you're right, and this is just more evidence for this movie sucking, I think, probably. But why make it a adult man looking back on his childhood in the early 60s?
That's an interesting question.
What's the point? What's the fucking point of that? Why does it eat, like, even if you said it in the 60s, why does it have to be an old guy telling the story?
I wonder if it's this. I think that even as a child, and I think all children have this, I had a sense of, like, a fearful sense of nostalgia that, man, I gotta enjoy this because this is gonna go away. And I was consumed with this idea. And I remember a lot of instances of this, of me being like pre-nostalgizing a moment and thinking about it. There's something appealing about a guy who's 60 being like, the best summer of my life was when I was this old, and you being that age going, oh fuck, this is it, man, this is like,
well, but can I say something very quickly? This is so funny. I remember I have two extremely vivid memories of immediately after watching both of these movies. And I went to see The Sandlot with my friend Nathan and came out with that feeling of like, well, I better fucking kid it up because this movie just told me that being a kid is awesome. And even though it didn't really resonate with me, I guess I'll just like act like a kid because I guess that's, you know, what I'm supposed to do. And it felt hollow and it felt fake. Fine. When I watched Stand By Me, only, you know, two years later, probably. 1 to 2 years later, I watched Stand By Me.
Did Stand By Me come out sooner than this?
Well, yeah, before. Yeah. It came out like 86 or...
But this is for sure pitched as baseball.
Yeah. Stand By Me. So if I saw this movie in 1993, I was 10. And I'm betting I saw Stand By Me 2 years later when I was 12, which was how old they were before they go into junior high. And I remember the same... What you just talked about, the same feeling. I sat outside my house. I watched it with my friends, three friends. You know, there's like four guys watching this movie. And it was not at all I really had a really profound feeling about thinking, what does it mean to be living as a kid? And how do I process that? And imagining what adulthood will be like looking back. But a really deep thought, deep sense of all that. And really felt very moved by it and very sort of touched by it. And being with my friends felt very present as opposed to false or being, you know, ascribed to me or placed upon me. And so that really is the difference between these movies. I stand by this idea that you could watch Stand By Me as at the same age that you, basically the same age you'd watch The Sandlot, and get it fine and have a far superior experience to what you just had. And so I kind of take back what I said before. There is a difference. I mean, maybe it's a difference of a couple of years, you know, it's not a difference between 8 years old and 12 years old, but that was a huge difference in terms of viewing response that I had.
Yeah. I think one is trying to be a comedy and trafficking in nostalgia. The other one is about something very, very real. And not trying to be a comedy. I was going to say, just as a side note, and maybe this is me segueing out of this, because I don't want to talk about The Sandlot for more time than The Sandlot has been on.
Yeah, that's...
A lot of you guys seem to think that we're wrong about Spaceballs, and I just want to tell you to fuck yourself. That was important before I forgot. Oh, well,
fuck yourself. I don't know about that.
No, I got a lot of pushback on the Spaceballs episode.
Spaceballs, the movie, is terrible. Your Spaceballs might be hilarious.
This is our new catchphrase.
Don't watch it.
Yeah, your movie might be fine. Don't act like you fucking know what Spaceballs is.
Spaceballs sucks.
Yeah. Also, this entire time we've been recording, I've been looking in the bag, and I can see four movies. I can see Purple Rain, Brazil, Good Will Hunting, and one other one.
Two of those are really good.
And Happy Gilmore. Not all of them are good, but all of those would have been so much more fun to watch than The Sandlot. And I just kept like wistfully having nostalgia for a time when I was watching anything else but The Sandlot. That's my nostalgia.
Wait, so it's interesting. So you guys have like reached this point where in your movie, in your podcast about nostalgia and movies, you reach this point where you seem to be earnestly telling people to not subject themselves to the experience of the thing that they love sucking.
Because nostalgia, that's the thing, is we're not here to ruin dreams. We're here to keep dreams alive, you guys. And we want to keep your dream alive, so don't watch it, because the dream is good.
Also, try to go back an hour and not listen to this. that would also help.
I have nostalgia for a time before I fucking rewatch The Sandlot. That's the part of my life I miss the most. Yeah,
totally. No, but like that, I'd imagine you guys like made this product because you felt that like something was missing if this thing that you thought was great was actually shitty, and like you felt like less
money,
authentic.
JC. We're doing this for the cash.
Well, you guys are like rolling in it. Like I know you guys can't see us in podcast world, but like we're all literally sitting on chairs made of $100 bills.
Shameless cash grab.
Yeah.
No, you're right. I mean, listen, it's not that we're here to have an axe to grind or a goal in this. It's trying to be a real look at this and trying to be as honest as possible. But 60 question mark episodes in, you start to see things that are repetitive and recurring.
Well, we set out to answer this question, sort of what is the role of nostalgia in our culture and why is it so present in our generation, seemingly, and what does that mean? And so the fact that we've watched a few movies that are also the subject of them is nostalgia is sort of an extra layer of weird exploration.
It's interesting to me that the answer to that question, you haven't answered that question. It's like, but it's like, Don't figure it out.
Well, but the but it, well, it's not. Don't
well, it's
figure
not
it out.
Figure it out.
But,
yeah.
But the title is "Does Your Favorite Movie Suck?" And if the answer is yes,
stay away.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
stay far away. It is an interesting conclusion, not one we set out to do, but this idea, and I think we'll come back to this because we've stumbled on something good here in this episode.
It kind of salvages the title for me because it's no longer about making fun of somebody. It's about, it's a warning.
Yeah, it's save your memories. And it's an interesting thing I think we'll come back to, and this is a good takeaway from this episode, which is sometimes the movie in your head is a far superior film, and so preserve that. It's something beautiful and it's something worthwhile, but you can fuck it up if you watch the source material.
Yeah,
but isn't that just taking the wrong pill in the Matrix? Like, isn't that like just choosing ignorance?
No, it's choosing a better story, because like you said, you'd stitched together a good story in your head, which was your narrative skills subconsciously, you know, gestating and carving together, sewing things together that didn't really fit to make something of sense.
Yeah, you just burnt the negative on that good Sandlot.
Yeah,
but I'm glad to know that it sucks. I mean, like,
really?
Yeah, I am. Like, it's a little sad. I mean, I kind of.
But your movie sounded awesome.
I miss it. Yeah, it is awesome. But like, my impulse out of that like isn't to feel like hurt or sad or outraged or mad. Like, I'm like gonna spend a little moment like grieving the part of like my brain that thought that was an awesome movie, but I'm actually really glad to know that that is a shitty movie, and that like I don't know, like I'm interested in what comes next. Like, I'm interested in the impulse that you guys seem to have come to, which is like, if you remember this movie and love it, don't watch it. Because I kind of have the opposite impulse. Like, my impulse is like, watch it and then like go find something better, or like make something better. There's awesome children's content out there, and like that, like the fact that this is like a kind of a shitty kids movie really bums me out, because the premise of this movie, apart from like what you guys, I'm interested in the questions that you guys have about like, you know, who this guy is and what he's doing, because I think the premise of this movie is that kids are stupid, they don't know any better, and let's like not take any time like that.
I don't think it's a fuck you to the movie. I think it's a call for preservation of a better nostalgia. So to me, it's not a dismissal of something.
Well, it's literally preservation of nostalgia itself.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. And I don't think it's not a dismissal. It's a call for preservation of something.
Well,
but
that's interesting.
Like, I'm surprised, like, knowing you, I'm surprised that's the argument you're making.
Yeah, I feel
because
there is no supreme truth. I mean, you know, it's a different movie to us now than it would have been when we were a child.
This is different than knowledge, because JC, you know, what JC's referring to is I'm a aggressive like truth seeker, I guess, or whatever, and then, like, I'd rather like know the truth even if it's a bummer,
painful or frustrating.
Yeah, and that's so different to me than this, because like Kaelin's saying, it's a subjective truth. And the world's not better if you know The Sandlot sucks. If you think The Sandlot's cool and you refer to it and use it in your life and it makes you happy and brings you joy, I don't think that's the kind of truth I'm talking about.
It's going to make you an asshole at parties if you're talking to a room full of people that love The Sandlot, and now all of a sudden you're like, you know what, that movie sucks.
But they're wrong.
I'm saying you're right. No, I'm saying you're right.
No. That's what I'm saying, is that I do think it's, I don't think it's rose-colored glasses or ignorance is bliss. I think it's something different.
Well, if I may, when we were first talking, Travis and I, well,
I thought Mike Garner invented this podcast. We were talking about why to do this show.
It was about what is going on? How come they're repurposing all these movies, and what is the value of sequelizing something from our childhood or remaking something from our childhood? And I think that what we both instinctively felt, although maybe haven't articulated like this until right now, is nostalgia is remembering. It's not reliving. It's not reforging. It's not trying to re-experience that same, wonder because you're at a different point in your life. It is the act of recalling a great thing. And that, when you disrupt that and fuck that up, it ceases to be as powerful, a valuable emotion. I'm not against a nostalgia. That's, well, of course not. You know, that's how we live our life. You have to think about stuff and, try to draw lessons from it and then try to remember those things. And,
but if it's not an act of remembering, if it's an act of like actually fictionalizing an artistic product, like, wouldn't you like to know that?
Well,
like,
nostalgia is a creative act, it turns out.
Totally.
Yeah, I like that.
All right, I nailed it, you guys.
Here's but another creative act.
No, hold on, JC's peeved before that. Go.
No. I mean, like, I totally buy that nostalgia is a creative act, but if what you're doing is embellishing or improving something, like, if you earnestly love something and remember it as great, and it's not, and I acknowledge that there's no objective truth, there's no, like, the subjectivity is the entire thing here, but a lot of people, like, I'm presuming that most people that are listening to this and engaged in this love film and think it's interesting, and so, like, for people that love film and are interested in stories, if nobody else should be curious about whether the things that they love from their childhood suck, it should be those people. And if it sucks, shouldn't you know it?
Well, let me ask you a question. I'll just direct this back to you. So you said in this podcast that you have referenced The Sandlot a bunch.
Yeah.
In your life.
Yeah.
Will you continue to do that?
No.
Okay, so what's up with that? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Because I assume it serves some purpose of metaphor or explanatory depth for you.
That's an interesting question because I don't... Sometimes it was a metaphor and explanatory depth. Sometimes it was like... quoting a movie over beers, like it's like a way to bond with people that all like remember a certain thing at a certain time.
Yeah.
And like the next time I'm in one of those moments where like some dudes and some maybe some ladies who remembered Sandlot lovingly are like quoting it, like that's going to be an interesting challenge for me because like I don't want to be the guy that's like, know what, that really sucks. I don't think I'm going to do that. Like I think I'm going to like.
Well, that's the question I think is how does it affect something that you have that you've entrenched as a thing that's now a different thing in your mind. I'm not making a utilitarian argument here about like, well, whatever's just the best for you. But I do think there's something to be said for you can't, it's very hard to maintain the utopian version in your head that you've created out of nostalgia and this new thing. It's hard for them to coexist because now you know the truth. And I don't think it's as simple as red pill, blue pill in the Matrix, but I do think it's, what is the best story for yourself here? Not in a way that's lying, because I do think that your nostalgic version is true. I think it's about where you meet the film. Like you've filled in the gaps between the actual film and your needs for it. So I don't know. I think there's something there. I would ask. We're gonna segue to the bag here. I would ask that you, if that moment comes up, JC, will you record something on your iPhone and then send it to us, and we'll stitch it in? Because I'm interested by that.
Totally.
Also, Spaceballs sucks. JC, I said you wouldn't get a chance to plug again. Give us a quick 20-second plug. Well, hey, thanks for fucking coming on. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was great. Thank you, guys.
Great. Yeah,
that
was really so fun. Happy we finally made that happen because JC lives in a different city and it's been hard to get him on.
So if you're in Chicago, check out Paper Machete every Saturday at Green Mill, 3 p.m. live magazine, great comedy and music. PaperMacheteShow.com.
Is there anywhere people should follow you, or you don't do any social media?
I'm a weird technology recluse.
All right. So,
Should I tell? I'll just tell very, very fast. So we're here in Chicago. We're shooting. The reason we're tired is because we came from the set of our television episode.
Yeah.
It's been very fun. Travis been here for a few days. I've been here for 3 or 4 weeks or something.
It's been great.
And it's awesome.
It looks awesome.
It looks great. The cast is incredible.
Incredible.
And we just got our deadline announcement last week. To those listening now. Check it out. Okay.
Next time you hear from us, we'll be back in sunny Los Angeles.
And JC gets the pick from the JC's magic bag.
JC's picking from the bag.
He's not looking.
Digging deep,
he's
buddy.
He's futzing about. I want you to pull a good one for us, JC. There's a lot of pressure here.
I want to say that
he's
having
uncomfortable eye contact.
Having listened to a lot of these things, the bag that I imagined was not this bag. This is a little bit disappointing.
Fucking
I'm not going to describe what it is.
Everyone does.
Next
week
on Does Your Favorite Movie Suck?
Office Space.
Great Mike Judge.
Yeah, I like
Mike Judge. Love that movie.
That's a good pull. And JC's a little jealous he didn't get to talk about Office
Space. I'm a little jealous.
See it
because one of the movies, like one of the episodes I listened to in prep was Trainspotting, and you talked about the sort of like the 90s nihilism sort of pushback. And you talked about Trainspotting, and you talked about Fight Club.
Yeah.
And I think Office Space occupied, like I know that it wasn't based on a novel,
space.
But it totally sits in that
You're
same
not
spot.
Not wrong. We've actually done Beavis and Butthead to America already.
I'm so thrilled
it's a
that
weird
we're doing
way.
Office Space.
It's really fun. I'm really
about.
Excited to hear what you guys do with that.
Thanks, JC, for being on. We're looking forward to next week. And
when we find out if Office Space sucks,
on
does your favorite
movie.
Yeah.